Blog Talk Radio.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on.
Is on.
Here's Ron.
Hey!
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We are live if it's Thursday, October 7th at 7 p.m., 7:01 p.m. Eastern Time.
Yeah.
7:01, yes. If you are listening to us live, you can get on the Blog Talk Radio chat for our page, which I believe is linked on social media, and chat will be there, or get on Facebook or YouTube. If you're watching the video there, and it's Thursday, October 7th, keep that in mind. You can add your comments there, and we'll get them here, and we'll deal with it next month. So. They're like, wait, what?
What? Well, we have a guest tonight. If you have any comments or any questions about our guest, you can always, you know, do that, you know, text it. Go on
Send
Facebook. So can people tweet you back? I mean, I know you put
they
out.
Can on, they can. I don't know if I get it here yet. I haven't had any tweets or anything sent to me, but yeah, I would probably get it on. I have no idea, but I know Facebook, yes, in the comments for this video, and then YouTube, yes, I would get that now, but tweets, I don't think I'm monitoring unless it's on the phone. Somewhere, tablets or something. I don't know.
I don't tweet, and so therefore, I'm confused on tweets so far. I've never had calls to. So, looks like we have our guest coming in on us. If that's his number, 917 area code. Our guest tonight. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's bring him on, and instead of letting him sit in the green room here, we'll bring him on and introduce him and all that good stuff. Is this Carlos?
It sure is.
Welcome to All About Wine, Carlos. Glad to have you join us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Ron. Thank you for the invitation.
Oh, it is our pleasure. It really is our pleasure completely. So, Mike and I were rattling on about, you know, different things, and you joined us. I didn't fully introduce you. Carlos, what was pronounced? Canero?
Yeah, Canero.
Okay. Canero. Carlos Canero is a director, and he directed a movie called A Wonderful Kingdom, and it's a documentary about the Douro Valley of northern Portugal. If you wine people out there, import people should immediately understand that the Douro Valley, what it is and where it is and what it does. It is the one of the premier areas in the world for port. And he did a documentary about it. And he's joining us tonight to tell us about the documentary, and we're going to discuss it. I had an opportunity to actually view it, and we're going to talk about that a little bit and all. So to start with, Carlos, where are you from originally? I mean, what are you a native Portuguese?
I sure am. I am Portuguese, born and raised in Porto.
Oh.
I then, in my late teens, when I was 19, I moved to London, where I did my study, where I studied film, and where I started my career, whatever that means. And and then almost 20 years later, I visited New York, and I met a wonderful woman. And here I live now, and we're married, and we have two kids.
Oh,
and so, so now it's been 5 years now that I live in, in Brooklyn, New York.
So your 917 area code here, that's Brooklyn then, huh? It popped up. We don't know all the area codes, and it popped up when you called, and I'm going, where is that? So, well, congratulations on the lovely family. I mean, staying in Brooklyn. Wow, I mean, that's a big change from Portugal. I mean, in the movie you said you grew up in the area where this movie was, and I tell you, from there to Brooklyn is like, wow.
Right. My I grew up in Porto, but my mom is from that area. She's from the Douro Valley. And that's where, as you can imagine, the inspiration or the love affair, let's say, because we would go and visit, you know, my mom's village.
Mm-hmm.
We would go there and visit family. And you know, you don't make much of it when you're younger. It's just there, right? It's just there.
Correct,
it's just part of, And then I also think that, as I said, I then left Portugal when I was 19, and I went to the UK. And as I also believe that you very much start valuing what you have or where you have or where you come from more when you don't have it or when you have left. Which was, this is perfectly natural. And so at that point, when I would go back to Portugal and I would, you know, visit my friends, my family, and I would be in Porto and I would go to Lisbon. And then I would go to the Douro Valley and I would be like, oh my God, this is time travel, right? I remember this one episode. I must have been like my early 20s, and I go over there in summer, and kind of like I meet these other kids and some of the young people, and we're kind of hanging out the nights, and they drive into the kind of middle of the mountain. I remember it was a dam, right? Because you have the river, the Douro River, and there's a lot of water dams producing electricity, yada yada. And they just drive to the middle of a dam, and they come out of the car, and I was kind of like, what's going on? Like, what do you guys do around here? And then they said, just look up, and I look up to the sky, and it was like this crazy, stupid like view of like the stars and the Milky Way. And I was mesmerized, but I just remember that I was so mesmerized that they were making fun of me. They're like, "Oh, look at the city boy,
comes
from London, and like he doesn't have this there." And I was like, "Of course not, of course, like you don't have them." So this is just to say that then, as a young man going back, I was like, "Wow, this is crazy, this is nuts." And, you know, the hospitality, the people, as in family or friends, because when visiting, my mom would very much try to take me around as a like, "Oh, you know, my son is here. We have to go and visit this and
we go
this
here.
People."
We go there.
You know, because we are here, it would be so rude if we wouldn't go to visit them. So, at the time, it was a nuisance because it was her agenda, you know. But I very much value, obviously, looking back. But it was like these friends and these people I've never met before. I'm like, okay, but their hospitality and I bring this up because hospitality is a big thing, and then everyone had their own wine, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember, like asking a lot of questions. so how do you do this, and why did you do this, and like it's nothing. Again, like it's just you have a little plot of land in the back of your small house, and you know you grow some grapes, and you just make some wine, and I remember once this man, like the husband of this friend of my mom, after dinner, like we started drinking this. I'm pretty sure that we wasn't the wine, and then we moved on like to some sort of. Aguardiente, a white spirit that he made and distilled of the moist, the leftover of the grapes. And I remember getting very drunk, and I remember telling my mom, because my mom was like in the living room with her friend, and they were chatting, and I just remember saying like, "Mom, we should leave now." Although this man was showing me and sharing, and he was very much entertaining all of these questions that I had. But I remember going like, which was an incredible experience, right? But I remember, like, this is too much of the good stuff we have to
But
now.
Here,
like,
have more.
Because I think he was like, we should have another chorizo. Like, we need more snacks, right, to keep the drinking going. Let me open a cheese. And I was like, no. You're too kind. Anyway, so this is just
here,
to say the love affair, you know, and as a young man, you know, I'm studying film in London, and I see these, you know, kind of the roots of the where my mom's side comes from, and I was like, oh. So I guess the seed then was planted there, right?
What, have you done other films?
Correct. So in terms of feature length, no. I did a bunch of short films and very much kind of like in this realm of food and culture. I've always been very curious about, you know, that. So some examples, just to I went to Berlin. I was like, I'm in Berlin, let me make a film. With a few friends, we also had like this little project going on called On Plate Still Hungry, where we just, you know, told and shared stories or made films about food and travel and culture. Anyway, I go to Berlin and I made a film about the Turkish community. Turkish community in Germany is huge. And the Turkish culture, incredible cuisine, right? I was like, okay, so what's the best? And I did some research and asking some friends. They took me to this kebab restaurant and ran by this family. And I decided to tell that the story of which, again, the story almost feels like the same, but they have different reiterations, which is immigrants. And one of the first things that connects them with home that they have left is food. Because it brings a lot of strong memories. And then suddenly you are in the city and you're offering what you know, the food that you know. And sometimes it really works and it's a huge success. And you're able to make a living out of that, right? We then made this other film in Montreal about the Haitian community. There's a big community from Haiti. And I started like picking up on these lines that people, you know, in interviews, people would say, and it's interesting, I also bring this up because maybe I lived that, which was, and the line goes, you know, I left my hometown, my home country, you know, the plan was to go for a year, and then I stayed 20, 30, 40 years. It was the same. I went to London for a year with a friend of mine, and then I ended up staying 20. I guess then naturally I'm intrigued by the stories of immigration as well, the moving, right, and I guess perhaps because I lived that. So I made those bunch of those films. I made a film, just to give you another example, about, I wanted to make a film about chef knives. But no one's going to pay me to go to Japan to do this, where they make the best chef knives, right, in the world. So I was lucky to find a little white studio in South London. I was living in London. And these three dudes, they were making chef knives under in a very London, like in an arch under the train track.
Oh yeah.
And they had their I was able to make this wonderful little film about the process again, just to throw it out there, which will connect to the Wonderful Kingdom process. I'm quite fascinated by process. And also just the similarity of that film, which is short film, which is called The Forge. There's no interviews. Like, I don't necessarily, it's not about me explaining to the viewer, you know, the history or the so and so of these people behind it. But I just want to show you. I just watch.
And I noticed that. Yeah, I noticed that in The Wonderful Kingdom. He let it speak for itself, and that was
exactly. And totally understand if people, some viewers, are like, "Oh, I wish there would be more information."
Uh-oh, I'm not hearing you, Mike. You there? Mike?
I can hear you, Ron.
Yeah, I can hear you too.
Oh, you can hear me? Okay. Ron, are you there?
Yeah. I think Ron cannot hear us.
I got quiet. We didn't hear anything.
Yeah. I can hear both of you.
Yeah, every once in a while there's something crops up and we have an issue on air. Let's see if he goes to his back. I thought I disconnected because we have storms in this area and sometimes that.
Wait, I was gonna ask Mike, where are you guys?
I am in Central Florida, near Lakeland, and Ron is on the west coast of Florida.
Gotcha.
Let's see if he's. Yeah.
And Ron's
so
back.
There he is.
Yeah, I'm sitting there listening to Carlos, and all of a sudden, blank, nothing, and I couldn't hear anybody, couldn't talk to anybody, so I don't know what happened. It just, again, we've had this problem on other occasions, and it just happened to do it now. So I apologize for me leaving like I did, but I think it's part of our connection, all that here. So
yeah, you do.
I missed out on some of the stuff you were saying. I had a question though. Did your wife and daughters go to Portugal with you? I mean, did you all take a trip over there before the film and decide to do it then?
Yes. The short answer is yes. In fact, at first, like I said, I met my wife when I visited New York for the first time. And the second trip that we did was in Portugal. And I remember that. So it was very early stage of our romance. And I kind of left her. She was going to do like some work in Porto, coincidence. And I was like, great, you do that because I'm going to drive to the Douro Valley to do some research. I'm going to meet some people regarding this film that I would like to make. So that was that. And then we got married in Portugal a few years ago, and this summer we were able to go to Portugal, which is a big thing to go with both of the kids and also just to see my family for the first time in almost 2 years because of the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
And then on this trip we were able to be with some of the wine producers featured on the film. They were in Porto. We had a wonderful lunch with our good friend Dirk Meeport, who's very kind to who's been very supportive of the film and the whole project, and we also became friends, which was a cherry on the top.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. So you all got married in Portugal then? Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Might be worth mentioning, just noting that you do have a slight echo now when you speak.
Do I really?
Just so you know. Yeah.
Okay.
It might be better now. That's better.
Is it better?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've turned the main line off. So there you go.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I see what you did, Mike. Okay, now, that's a wonderful kingdom. We've gotten
mm-hmm.
some background on you, but the reason you're on is because you directed this movie, A Wonderful Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
I had an opportunity to see it. It is beautiful. Okay, let me start out by saying that. I really, really love the scenes of the area and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I was fascinated by the terracing of the grapevines. I never,
mm-hmm.
you know, you hear about the terracing and stuff like that, but you never really understand how high the terraces are and what's involved with it. And I saw this movie and I went, wow, it's like if you lose your footing, you're going to tumble for half a mile before you hit the bottom. I mean, it's just a lot of hills. And it was just a gorgeously filmed movie. And I started to watch it, and I started to identify, and this may seem weird, and it may be what you were looking for in it, but I started to identify with the grape. I being picked and then being thrown in the carrier and then taken to the winery,
mm-hmm.
and the process that the grape goes through to release its juice to make
mm-hmm.
The port and all that. And I really did. It was a journey that I had never considered or experienced. And it was well put together for that. I just really enjoyed that aspect of it. But all the people, are they all part of one co-op, or are they different people from different areas? Or
right. So the region of Trás-os Montes, where the Douro Valley is, and that the Douro River crosses, the Douro River comes, is born, starts in Spain, and then it crosses Portugal, and obviously goes all the way to the Atlantic. And it's a poor region, you know. It's a simple folk that they do work the land and agriculture and goats and, you know, fairly simple and poor and remote, right? And so... And that's where you put those, like my ancestors, like my grandparents, and obviously the region has been producing wine, historically wine, they've been making wine there, whoever was there, like for 2,000 years. But
wow,
you know, the Douro Valley. It was the first demarcated wine region in the world. So this goes back to 1770 something. Which means that, you know, port wine can only be called port wine if it comes from within these limits. And this is to say that, so then it's an important aspect of the economy, right? So it's taken seriously. So then when the harvest comes, they're like, okay, cool, we got to do this. And it means that it's, there's work for everyone. So in a poorer region where people maybe don't have much work, or maybe they just grow what they, well, I'm sure that they did, that's what obviously it happened and still happens. But this is just to say that the harvest was a guaranteed month long, maybe 6 weeks of work. Great. And so to this day, it's kind of the same. So everyone that we see in the film, they are from the from that region. In fact, yeah, I'll just stop there. They might come from a town or a village further away, but they kind of like, well, kind of like know each other, and which I find that really interesting, because you know, labor for harvesting and picking, like a lot of it's like immigrants and like cheap labor or whatever, like. And over there, and what I found interesting, that's, so we shot the film 3 years ago, so that was the harvest of 2018. Everyone is from, it's not even Portuguese, it's like they're from that region. So the importance of that month-long guaranteed work, and that was something that was captured in the in this book that I adapted the narration that then Malcolm read by Portuguese writer Miguel Targa. He captured that in his text, that people, the region just comes alive, and you know, what's 11 months of the year is kind of like a quiet bucolic region, you know. In September, comes the harvest, it's busy, the trucks up and down, and people, the picking and the stomping and the machines working, creating this wine that will inebriate the four corners of the world, as one of the lines of the film is.
Yes, yes. And you know, the region there, from what I understand about Portugal and Port, the region there was basically under a servitude of the big conglomerates for centuries, if you will. It isn't anymore, is it? I mean, it's gotten away from the servitude, I hate to use, but that might be a good word.
I guess so, yeah. I guess that all of this came to be because the Brits wanted to drink port wine.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it was exploited by British families, houses, names for centuries. And then I'm going to say maybe in the last 30 years, less, and you know, Portuguese producers, and also the region changed, where there was a focus in more quality, and now there's been some really interesting stuff being made. But also now anyone that has a piece of land there, anyone that has a small estate, can turn that into a boutique hotel. Boom, and they're generating money. So not like not so remote, right, as it used to be. It's so much so that it's a place of interest. Like, people really want to go there. So it's changing a lot.
It seems like the area has, well, just because of the fact that it's more noted around the world and all that, it seems like the area is becoming a destination for a lot of tourists, and it seems like that money feeding in there would help also.
Yes. Well, yes. the what everyone fears, and this is a concern, like for places like Porto in Lisbon, which is like fantastic. Everyone wants to visit Lisbon and Porto in Portugal. Great. Everyone makes money of it, generates a lot of business. But then comes those problems of the urban places, which is you can't really live in the center of the city because everything becomes an Airbnb. And there's a new hotel opening or going up every week. And kind of loses. I understand. It just needs to be regulated. But anyway,
losing that small town appeal, that small town flavor that I'm sure you grew up with, and
that's
what you're so used to. And when you start getting, you know, Hilton building a 8-story hotel, that doesn't sit well with you, I would imagine. Yeah.
Me, but I don't live there, right, Ron? Like, what about the people that they live there? I think it was on this last trip.
Yeah.
Or when I got married, and quite a lot of friends came from the U.S. I remember seeing some resistance to, like I said in the beginning, like, Portuguese are known for hospitality. And I think I never really understood that, but even like making the film, I'm just thinking about my past and having this experience. Like I said before, the man changed wine and he's like, "Why didn't I?" Hospitality is a big thing, and I feel like maybe now as a consequence, right? Maybe they don't want to be so friendly or so open-armed and so welcoming. And I understand. So this is to say that could also be a problem in the future for the Douro. I hope not, because as the name of the film says, it is a wonderful kingdom. It's a little gem.
Oh, it's gorgeous. I mean, this is what you showed on the film there. It's just an absolutely gorgeous area. And it has that appeal. It shows the people, and you know, I don't want to give the complete film away because people really do need to see it. I mean, it just is something that they really need to sit down and with an hour and 15 minutes, and it's worth the time to sit down and do it. It's not telling you about wine. It's telling you about people.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's interesting the fact that the people and they all seem to be happy with what they're doing, and it doesn't seem work so much as it is joy that they're getting the grapes and they're making these wonderful end products. And I think that's what comes through to me a lot with the people, and the fact that they take so much pride in what they're doing.
Yeah, I agree. There's a scene over there where we have, in the beginning of the film, where you see the workers, this team, they're picking grapes into the boxes, and then they have a break. They have a lunch break, and I remember it was hot. It was like, I'm going to say, that it was like 12, like half 12 noon, almost 1 p.m., so peak sun. This was September. I'm going to say that's like 90-something degrees. 90 degrees,
wow.
I'd say. So they pick, they find like the spots with the shade where they can sit, and they have the lunch that they brought from home. And that, to what you just said, the fact that this is work and it's fun, and there's a fantastic scene where one of them is like really the banter between them and one making fun of the others, even because they know that there's a camera, right? And the whole thing was great to capture that. Very genuine, very spontaneous. And it was, as you say, it was great that as I'm filming this, right, I was like, okay, cool. I was always very interested about like the lunch scene. Like, so what do they bring for lunch? How does it go? What's the ritual? And it was great that he wasn't like, oh, my God, You know, like, we're so tired. This is horrible. Like, there was never, right? There was never that. So it was fun. It was lighthearted. It was one of my favorite scenes. And then in that scene, yes, which I asked him, like, oh, you know, this hard work of the picking the grapes. And they're like, well, you know, the harvest is, it's okay. What's really hard work is when you're setting up the steps, and when you're creating
when you're planting, and when you're planting, you're on your knees all day, and
I was like, oh, that's exactly. And I was like, oh, that makes sense, because one of the things that, so just another fact, one of the things that makes this region quite beautiful is, I understand that wine regions in itself, they're quite beautiful. There's this repetition of vineyards, like, it's beautiful. But the Douro Valley, it's the biggest mountainous wine region. So you have these vineyards in mountains, and the way to grow it so that it works, they create these steps, right? And so because it's a mountain, it's rock, it's schist, it's granite, it's hard.
So then
someone had this idea hundreds of years ago to, like, oh, I know how we can conquer, very mankind thing to say, like, how we can conquer and twist the nature so that it works for us. I don't think that, and so what it means with this hard terrain is that it's able to retain the heat and the water, and that works really, guess what? It works really well for wine.
But so much work on those terraces and everything.
Absolutely.
I was amazed on the terraces. You hear about terraces and all that, and, you know, and in the wine business, you know, different areas talk about it. But boy, this was it was mind-boggling how steep these are, and how you have two rows of grapes, one on one side, one on the other, and then a path to the middle so that you can, you know, put the machinery down and pick, and that's it. Then you go up another complete, you know, 10, 15 feet, and you have another terrace. And it labor intensive, yeah. I can just...
Yeah. And also, just want to mention that I, as you said, and thank you for saying that, it's not really a film about wine, it's a film about the people. I wanted to make this film as an homage to these people, because everything is connected, like, as you know, Portugal and, like, Douro is a destination, and people are drinking more, like, Douro wine, which is great, it's fine. I wanted to show the people that really make this, right, the ones that they toil the land, because it's really hard work. And I never wanted to focus or tell the story on the owners, because the people that they own this, they're people with a lot of privilege. They have a lot of attention around them. They don't need my attention. I don't want to give them my attention. And I really wanted just to show the people. I'm also fascinated by their faces, right? Because just, you know, they work the land, like, they're the sun tanned, and, like, the wrinkles on their faces, and I think that I was able to capture that. It was very much a conscious decision of, like, showing the faces of people that, and that's what I wanted to do. So, yeah, I appreciate that you noticed that.
Well, actually, you did capture that, too. You showed the people, you showed how they work and all that. And I think if someone approaches this in the fact that this, well, like I said, I understood the grape going through this. And, you know, the people what they're doing with the grape, from the picking it off the vine, throwing the baskets, and then throwing the back of the tractor and taking it down to the winery, and then the process of stomping it barefoot. I mean, you know, these are a classic thing there too. You show the ladies and the guys stomping mm-hmm. the grapes with their feet, and you get an idea of what the grape goes through and the people who are putting it through this. And I enjoyed that tremendously about the movie. It was a different approach that you never consider, and it's something that was fascinating to me.
I'm really happy to hear that, just because as making the film, one of the things that I struggled the most was my vulnerability. Like, I was like, does this even make sense? Would anyone even care about this? Does it? I get it, Carlos. Like, you're making something that means something to you. You know, you feel this, but don't be afraid of it. But I was. I felt myself at times during the process of making the film that I was the biggest force of resistance to whatever stage of the process, which I saw that at the time. So this is just to say that, you know, let's go, let's do this, it's going to be fine. And then just to hear that, you know, just to hear you say that, and I'm like, fantastic, great, it worked. Yeah. The feeling that I wanted to share comes across. So that's a good point.
I captured that all the way through. I mean, it was just each of the people and each of the steps going through it. It shows you that they enjoy what they do and that they are, well, everybody had their job. Everybody did their job. Yeah. Everybody did their job because there was no problems or anything. They knew what to do. And
they
just sort of understood, too, that if there was a problem on anything, if anything happened, you understood, and without being spoken, without being explained,
mm-hmm.
that everybody would jump in and help and solve the problem. Because everybody worked as a unit. And even if the people up picking the grapes were up in the hills picking the grapes, on the terraces
yeah.
picking the grapes, they were still part of the unit. And that came across
yeah.
very well.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was going to say, you mentioned the stomping, which
yeah,
was a lovely
stomping
scene.
Of the grapes.
You know,
that's something that
yeah.
I thought that was, I didn't realize they were still doing that on a large scale. I thought it was all machines now.
Right. No, so, yes, yeah, so stomping is a process of breaking and crushing the grapes. And in winemakers, wineries in the Douro Valley, because, you know, it's this old country and they've been doing this for centuries, this estates, these quintas, these country estates, I'm going to say all of them still have those tanks made out of stone where people go in and they stomp the grapes.
Wow.
I felt that, I was like, I did ask that question. I was like, boom. Why? You know, like, as you said, like, you got to get going. Like, why is this? Because this is time consuming. And what was interesting was that in that scene that I show in the film, they do it twice a day. They do one in the morning. That is kind of like the workers, they can have the radio on, you know, music is on, and they're chatting, and they're just like walking around, stomping the grapes.
Mm-hmm.
But then they do another one in the like early evening where there's no music, no radio, and there's no chat, no talking, silence. And I was like, okay, so why is that?
I think
like,
the same. Why is that?
And they're like, because we believe that the focus, the attention, the intention makes the product or makes it a better wine. Huh. And I thought to myself, well, you know what? If you believe that, and if you do that, who am I to disagree? the real reason is that they believe that the foot or a person crushing the grape or stepping on the grape doesn't crush the pits, the seeds inside. Because if you do crush the seed, then it releases a bitter taste. You're making port wine. Port wine is sweet. You don't want that bitterness. That's the real reason. But, you know, it's 2021. You don't really need to do it like that. But they do because they believe in it. And they've been doing it forever since. And what I love is that as that scene in the film kind of shows, it's almost like a church-like moment. It's the silence, you know, and there's this intention. And you're in a place, the walls and the roof around you and above you, it's 150 years old, 200 years old. And I was like, wow, this is... And everyone is into it. No one questions it. It is what it is.
Well, like, they were intense. Yes, that's what they had to do right then. You can see it in their faces. I mean, you showed some of the people, and it was the concentration there. It was not letting their mind wander and, you know, thinking about what they're going to cook for dinner that evening. It was like, we need to do these grapes the proper way right now. And it was evident in the faces of everyone.
Which I think... You know, again, this day and age, just to have that. And the fact that we, where you are in Florida, where I am in New York, or anyone listening, like in the United States, that we can fairly easy find a bottle of port wine or a bottle of Douro wine, and that has likely been stumped, and it will cost us $20, you know. It's pretty incredible. So
that surprises me because, you know, I understand when you explain to it that you don't want the seeds to crush. I understand that, and it makes complete sense. But I never realized that it was being stomped by feet so much in the region. It surprises me.
Across the region,
Wow.
I'm sure that maybe there are producers that they go more for the quantity as any one region, any one producer. I don't know. But majority, they still do, I think it's called a traditional process, like harvest. And I also believe because it's a tradition, so they are into that. You know, they don't want to cut corners short. They, the conditions obviously now are much better. And we saw that how, you know, there's a scene at the end where you have the workers having the lunch, you know.
Right, yeah.
And the great scene. I also think that we can see that they're happy because in terms of working conditions, like, it's great, like it's fair.
That
56 years ago, I doubt it.
But at the time they realized, you know, it was probably what they did at the time and they understood it and it wasn't really much different in a mental attitude than they have now, I don't think. I mean, they didn't know anything different and so therefore... That's what they did. You mentioned the meal at the end there. I'll tell you what. I saw that soup and I saw that pasta dish.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. That looks so good.
Oh, my God. I love that you mentioned that. Yes. So it's very traditional meal. So the cook of this winery, she's cooking for the workers. There's two tables. Let's say that maybe there's like 15, 16 people on each. There's maybe 30 people in this dining room.
Wow.
And they know that they have to give the workers like a sturdy meal, like something that, you know, keeps them working. It's physically demanding, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they have this dish, and very traditional. So you have like pasta shells and like chunks of meat and carrots and
peppers were in there.
Oh, chickpeas in it as well. And has these cooks, and I think it might come from the pasta, like the sauce thickens up, right?
Mm.
And it's just like a rewarding meal. It becomes like in a soup, in a soup bowl, and you eat it like with a spoon, and it just tastes great. I remember exactly that when I came back from that shoot, I tried to make that dish straight away for my wife. I failed miserably. I also failed miserably because I believe that she was like, oh, you know, don't put the pasta there, like cook it separately. It's like, oh no, that's maybe one of the main.
That's what they do.
And she's like, oh man, you know, I'm not going to leave it there. And then the whole thing was just a mess. Very disappointed, and I haven't tried it since. But I also remember being at the place where we shot the opening scene that I was talking before, like the picking and the workers. They had the lunch there where they were picking the wine, and that was from a different winery, Churchill's. And they served us the same lunch, that same
dish. Really? Oh, wow.
And I was like, I'm not going to lie, like, I'm like, just keep it coming. I can have this dish. So,
can I have it to go back?
It's also interesting, just last notes, just about that dish, which is called Hanshu. It's very traditional. It's a working man's kind of meal. What a phenomenal meal for a working man. But like, that's the kind of thing that you do not find in a restaurant. Restaurants don't do that. Traditional, they might be like, that's not kind of meal. But you and me were saying, put it on any menu, we'll have it.
That's right.
And it's interesting that over there, I'm pretty sure that you cannot find it in any. It's just not the kind of dish that you would serve at a restaurant. That maybe still to this day it's looked down upon, which
really?
Is obviously ridiculous. Maybe because it's just like, I think it's so. I'm gonna look into this. I think that you won't find this in a restaurant, but here we are defending that.
Let me tell you a story to add to this, okay? I was watching the movie, and it got to the point where they served this soup, and then they brought up this pasta dish. And I paused the movie, and I called my wife in, and I said, come here. I said, look at this. I said, look at that. I said, I want you to make that. I said, that
That's
looks
fantastic.
So good. And she looked at it, and she goes, ask your guest tonight what the recipe is.
That's
so
right. No, 100%.
I guess it's not good to ask you because you tried it and you messed it up. So.
No. But I'm going to share a recipe with you, and you can even post a link. This is something that so I'll happily share. You know, everyone tries and see what works for them. But If that's one of the things that we taste from watching this film, like this dish, I will be very happy because that's why it was also included, that scene, and you know, seeing the cooks serving from the pots, the cooking pots to the serving dish, and the fact that she says, oh, you know, this is what you guys, the crew, will be having. And I was like, great.
Yeah, I heard her say that. This is for the crew. And then, but that looks so good. Well, you have my email address. Send me the recipe on the All About Wine. Send us All About Wine, because I would love to have that recipe. That looks so good.
I want to say one last thing. When we were finishing making the film, and then the pandemic hits, and
I was going to ask.
People not being able to travel. I remember, me and my partner, Nick, he shot the film, but this film, we were like, this might be a great time for us to put the film out there because, you know, people can't really travel. And so here we are maybe giving them an opportunity to go and see a place that they haven't been perhaps. And then we talked about the what if people, they wherever they are, and like I said, it's fairly easy in the United States to find port wine or a bottle of red or white from the Douro Valley to get a bottle and to sit down and to watch the film because it just makes it experiential, you know, and fun as well.
The Douro Valley is noted for port, without a doubt. I mean, that's you mentioned it, and people immediately think port. But what other wines are made there that are of note?
Yeah, so the red wine, it's a big wine. It's a full body wine. And that's what I think that newer producers or younger producers are trying to make them maybe more like sophisticated, easy to drink wine because it's a big wine and the big wine is not for every occasion, right?
No.
In fact, obviously, I went through that, like the big wine becomes, it's tiring. It's the white wine, but it's fantastic. So there's lots to try there. And then with the white wine, it's not so, it's not that it's popular, but you don't find it very much. The white grape, but the white wine is white. It's crispy. It's crisp. It's not very fruity.
Dry or sweet on the white?
No, not sweet. Not sweet. Not sweet. So, yeah, dry, crisp, some acidity, not so fruity. But, yes, it's going to be so. If it's not the port, it's going to be a bottle of red wine. So when I go home, like even if it's like a celebration, like meal, like a Christmas or like an Easter, like I very much enjoy just going to the shop, like supermarket, and seeing like what's available, like stuff that I haven't tried or like stuff that I've tried that I want to remember again. So this is just say that buying wine from the Douro, it feels, I guess, home, I guess.
I can imagine for you it would. I would go crazy if I went there and had a shop full of Douro wines on the shelf. I would not know when to stop.
I think so, because it's exciting, because you're like, oh, what about this one? And then it's...
Exactly.
And then if there's... Because it's interesting, because people, they're passionate about this. So if there's someone next to you, they're like, oh, but you have to try this one. They're like, oh, okay, fine, if you say so. Easy, like you don't even have to say, like, sure, yes, you know. And then, you know, if you're able to have a few people around the table, and if you're having a meal, it's interesting because it's never about the excess, but it's just the joy of that sharing and the. I guess
that's what wine's about. I want to cover one more thing quickly about the film, though. You showed the must, and you showed them shoveling it out and doing that. That's an aspect that most people ignore, but that was interesting. I enjoyed seeing them, you know, moving it around and breaking it up and different things. You never hear about that, and that was a good thing to do, I think, in the film.
So interesting that you mentioned that. So I am a fan of what they make with it, which is the aguardiente, which would be do you know what I mean?
Aguardiente? Yes, I do. Yeah.
I'm a fan of it because it comes from the grape. Still drinks come from different fruits. They have a different flavor. with aguardiente that comes from grape. I appreciate that. It can get really a high level of alcohol. You have to be,
What I can't think of the name. I can picture what the I know, but that's it's interesting because most of the time people don't think of the byproduct of
but it's
grapes.
So important these days, right? It's so important that you use everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like nose to tail, but the grape.
Right.
Of using everything and making as much as you can from what the land has given you. So, but then there's also commercial interest to it. You know, the fact that you can make something, like you said, you can commercialize a byproduct. Great. Great for the business. But yes, I wanted to show that because of also that. We were able to show there's two scenes. There's one with the red, young man with a red T-shirt, and he's just like, and then there's those two other guys, and it's the green grape, the white grape.
Right. Shovel them in. Does the area grow anything besides grapes? Is there any other crop?
Very good. Very good. Olive oil.
Oh, okay.
Olive oil. I think that's the line. There's a line that goes. There's only two things that you could grow in this rocky terrain, terroir, and it's grapes, olives. I don't think there's if they.
Well, I saw you showed some olive trees there. I remember seeing those.
Yes, exactly.
You didn't show anything else, and I just wondered if there was anything else that was growing there because the soil, I mean, geez, trying to plant anything in that, you would have to have something that would be a long-term tree or grapevine or something that you don't have to replant every year because there would be no way you can plow that up.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
It's fascinating. Mike, do you have any questions for Carlos?
No, actually, I'm good. I've just been looking up a few things like the aguardiente, looks like. Aguardiente. There you go.
Yeah.
And there's a reference to Portuguese fire water, which.
That's right.
Kind of interesting. Yeah. I was reading about that, and there's a couple of wineries in Florida that I know of that do grape stomping, but mostly it's done during events, and there's an admission to it. I don't know if it's actually...
There's an exhibition aspect to it, yes.
Yes, competition and all that stuff.
Right. I don't know if it's actually for... for the production of the wine or if it's just for entertainment purposes and then they, dump it out. I have no idea, but
I think most of it's for entertainment.
I've just been looking up a few things and, I'll be, definitely, watching this, documentary very soon. So
please find yourself a bottle of Douro while watching it, Mike, just for that experience. It should be fun.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Good recommendation. Thank you.
I have nothing but praise for the documentary Wonderful Kingdom. It was so enjoyable. Now, how can people see this? How can people purchase or view or whatever it is? How can they go about seeing this?
It's on Apple TV and Amazon Prime. I believe it's on a couple of other platforms like Vudu, there will be more platforms moving forward. But the distributor started with really the main focus is Apple TV and
Amazon Prime. Oh, and also, you mentioned it quickly, but I want to make a point of it. Malcolm McDowell is actually the one that narrated this.
That's
How did you get him?
So we at the late stage of the film, and we needed the narrator. We got the distributor involved, and they're like, you know, a recognizable voice would be great. And I was like, well, yes, of course. And we made a list of names, and but, you know, always with the, this is very much independent filmmaking, with the concern of how much is that going to cost us, right?
Right.
And it, as many things are able to work out in life, there was a friend of a friend.
Oh.
That knew the agent from Malcolm, and Malcolm lives in the same city as my business partner Nick in California, and there was like this kind of connection, so that the introduction was made, and it was just coincided that he was available, and he was kind to make it work for us. You know, in a way that we could make it happen, and that was it. So that was incredible. That, you know, kind of breakthrough, and that we got him, that he said yes, and then very professional. We got like a studio. We went in, and I've again like not being able to travel to be there, which was such a shame. But just walking in on a Zoom or directing Malcolm McDowell via Zoom, he was incredibly professional. I made obviously the silly joke of, "Oh, you've done this before," because he was interesting, because he's also like reading a text that it's translated. Asian text is Portuguese, so he's reading is a translation, and then there's a lot of words over there that are Portuguese, like when he's naming cities.
Oh yeah.
When he's naming the grapes, and you know, not easy, and he wasn't fazed by it. He's like, no, I got this. Let me try again, and he would just kind of, but he was great when he worked with a profession, because like he knows what to do. And so it was great, and I think it was like.
And it was a very good, a very good narration too. I mean, I don't know who wrote the narration. If it were you, you know, congratulations, because it was very good. It was captured what the area was and what you were doing and all that. It was very pleased with the narration on that.
Yeah, very poetic, and
yeah,
and I guess that's where he's like his voice and like what he brings to the table. It worked really well.
Yeah.
So yes, he was obviously, as you can imagine, as a filmmaker, I like to be able to work with Malcolm McDowell, and the way that he worked so well, it was a joy, and
I'm very
lucky.
He had a good voice for it, too. And he did an excellent job of pronouncing those Portuguese words, too.
Not easy, you know.
I know. I saw him on the screen there, and I'm going, oh, no. Boy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Not me. Yeah. So, well, yeah, Apple TV Prime, Amazon Prime. So if anybody is interested, grab yourself, like Carlos said, grab yourself a bottle of port or Portuguese wine and sit down and tune it in. It's don't look for wine to be explained, but enjoy the people and what they're doing. And any
further
thoughts, Carlos?
No, I was just going to say, any further info, if anyone wants, you know, it's wonderfulkingdom.com. Easy, you have all the links there if you want to read more about it, and if you want to share, you know, get in contact, ask any questions or whatever, or wonderfulkingdom.com, that's a easy go to.
It is, yeah. Oh, very good. I didn't know. I'll have to check that out. I didn't know you had a link there.
You have a
Mike,
real quick, if I
can. You're gonna.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Just real quick, do you have any other documentaries or short films that are maybe worked on or coming out in the near future?
Good question. I am researching or starting to work on a project about lithium, and it's connected to a wonderful kingdom because they found a large bank of lithium in the Douro Valley.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, and what I find interesting as a filmmaker, as a storyteller, is that this wonderful kingdom that I just told you about might be at risk because of this this conundrum. Like this, we all want the greener future, and the green future means electric cars, and electric cars means lithium. But where does the lithium come from? It comes from mining and open pit mines.
Open pit mines.
And Europe doesn't have much of it. And where do they find it? The largest one in northern Portugal.
Oh,
so I feel like I could have a good, a valid angle to tell that story. So it's not about wine.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Do it. That would be a wonderful document telling, you know, I mean, there's so much that's involved with that. And the fact that if they found it there, you're going to start losing the Douro Valley as we know it because, oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
I'm excited about your next movie.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for asking, Mike. And thank you. Ron.
Yeah, you have quite a bit already, and just want to know what's next for you. So, yeah, very cool. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Thank you.
Carlos, thank you for taking the time this evening to join us, and it fascinating. I'm looking forward to the email with the recipe of that.
Absolutely.
That pasta dish, I just, oh my gosh, that looks so good. And I keep saying that, but when everybody sees the movie, they'll know what I'm talking about. But send me the recipe, and like I say, look forward to your next movie. That could be an interesting one if you decide to go with it, lithium in Douro Valley there. And thanks for taking the time. It was great, and hope to be able to talk to you again in the future when your next movie comes out.
That's right. Me too. Thanks again, Ron. And thank you, Mike. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome. Have a good evening now.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye. All right.
Oh, I don't know if you can hear it, but it is thundering, so I put the little warning up on my video feed that the storms in the area video feed may be affected. So far, nothing. And I'm still on.
Yeah, I saw that. I wasn't, though. It kicked me out.
Yeah. Traded,
and, you know, I'm sitting there listening to Carlos, and all of a sudden, nothing. I go, Carlos,
yep.
Mike, can you hear me? And once you didn't respond, I knew I was dead. No noise, no anything, just boom, it stopped.
Well, I heard you say that, and then I stopped hearing Carlos. I stopped hearing everything, and I was like, hello, can anybody hear me? Nothing. And I go, so I refreshed. And I go, and I'm still on. I'm going, okay, I'm still here. Can you hear me, Carlos? And no, can you hear me, Ron? Nothing. I go, okay, I'm done. And just as I was going to redial in, Carlos comes up and he goes, yeah, I can hear you, Mike. And I go, oh, wait a minute. What?
Oh,
and then
good.
He called. I told him, I said, Ron is going to probably call back on his backup, you know, method. So, you know, we'll stay here for a minute and see when he comes back.
So, yeah, and, you know, as soon as it went out, I tried to get a hold of, you know, talk with nothing from either one of you. And mm-hmm. I had the phone sitting here. I always keep it next to me in case, but it was buried underneath a bunch of papers. I had to go, where's my phone? And then I finally found it, and then I called in. That's your thing.
Whoever's disconnecting us on Blog Talk Radio got confused. They were like, do we disconnect Mike's line or do we disconnect the All About Wine line? And
no,
this time it was you.
This one. Click. You know, I know. It's, you know. But, yeah. Oh, well. But good interview. You need to watch that movie.
Yeah, I'm going to.
It's interesting. Like I say, don't look at it to learn anything about wine. Look at it just for what he did. He portrayed and profiled the people, and it was just an interesting approach. It just really, really was enjoyable. So,
check it out. for sure. Thank you.
And everyone out there, too, you know, check it out. I mean, there's easy ways to find it. Everybody has Amazon Prime or
Apple TV.
So,
yeah.
You know,
so it's out there.
It's out there.
Yeah.
And a wonderfulkingdom.com if you want to know more or anything. I didn't know he had that site. I'll have to check that out myself. I didn't know it was there.
Yeah, I was on. I was when I was doing some searches, like all of his previous works, and like
you
said, they're all, yeah, they're all short films and, you know, short works and different topics. And there was a site I forgot where I went to, but it was like filmography or film something with his profile, and it listed everything and won a couple of awards for two of them.
Oh wow!
And yeah, so. Yeah, it's
Look for under his name.
Do it. Yeah, did a search for him. Don't confuse him with the soccer player. Apparently, there is a very famous soccer player, footballer, by the same name. So,
oh no,
that one. Yeah, it's different. and I looked at that and I go, I was about to ask him, and I go, wait a minute, that's not. That says nothing about his films or anything, documentaries or nothing, and then. Down a little bit, and sure enough, there was a filmmaker, director, and you know, producer, and so yeah, I found the right one. But
yeah, I wish I'd known. I would have asked him if he played football.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. I'll have to check him out on that other stuff. I didn't know. I was reading most of the profiles of when we first connected, and he never mentioned awonderfulkingdom.com. So I'll have to. Go to that. So,
yeah,
well, we are 8:16 already.
Yep, another one in the books, and
another one in the books.
We'll close out this one for this Thursday, and we'll be back next Thursday, the 14th of October, and with All About Wine, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio, Facebook, and YouTube. Thank you all for tuning in, and have a
thank you for
great
listening.
Week. And
be safe.
Yes.
And we will see everyone next week.
Mm-hmm. We'll see you later. Thank you.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
And